Hey, how are you? This is Dave Broadbeck. I'm gonna get technical doctor Dave Broadbeck, and I'm gonna tell you about, in the following lecture, Psychology 2606 or Biology 2606, whatever you prefer. Introduction to Behavioral Neuroscience for the winter 2024 term. Don't say 2024. Stop talking like that. You never said 1993. Of course, most of you weren't born yet, but we didn't. So anyway, right. So here's the lecture. Hope you enjoy it. If you don't really care, as long as you learn something. Okay, so as I said last time, I have prepared absolutely nothing. So this may be very short, but what I want to do today is I'll again talk quickly about, if you don't mind, the final exam again. And I still expect to get an email from somebody the night before the final exam saying, "What's the format of the final?" I feel like just I should have just sent in this MP3. And say, at 2 minutes and 2 seconds in. So remember, 10 definitions, you choose four. There will be a very clear warning on the final two that says, don't choose five and think I'm gonna mark your best four. Okay, so you just do four. They're a little more heavily weighted towards vision, language, and thinking. More heavily weighted than if you're thinking of the whole year, that's only about 3.5 weeks, and it's certainly more than a quarter of the definitions. I'll say that. That's a fair statement. Yes, it is. So, because I have made up the final exam notes, I was doing that in my office. There is a diagram. It is a straightforward diagram that will not surprise you. Okay? Well, it may surprise you. I don't know. Who the hell are you? But when you get the diagram, I think you'll look at it and go, oh, okay, that's it, got it. So, and again, it's the standard thing, fill in the things that aren't labeled and tell me what they do. And again, a couple of words, I don't need a long, arduous treatise on whatever. And then there's another question, and we talked last time about the big themes of the class, and I think if you think of these big themes while you study, you'll be fine. I think here's a one thing you might want to try, is if you made up, let me just quickly pull this up. excuse me, Becca, did I just cough in your ear? That must sound horrible. No? Okay. Well, if you're used to it, fine. So, okay, remember, the first thing was how counterintuitive everything is, that the organization is weird. So, this tells us, so it's something that comes out, I guess the big point here is that it's organized in a haphazard fashion, and that's because it's an evolved system. Remember we talked about this the other day. So if you think about those kind of things while you're studying, it's an evolved system. And in the light of evolution, let's see, there we go. Understanding function can help us understand mechanism. Remember, we're talking about function and mechanism, that's evolution and sort of direct causation. We have an evolved system, and I think keeping that in mind is an important one. Remember we talked about how, for example, the
where pathway is older than the what pathway, and seeing it here. Because the simpler thing is where is it? The more complicated thing is what is it? So one of the things evolved first. So we can keep those kind of ideas in mind, and if you keep those ideas in mind while you're looking over stuff from the term, I think it really will help your studying and putting it into perspective about how everything works, okay? We learned, the other big theme again was we learned a lot about function from dysfunction. And if you think about almost all the stuff we know about, about V1 and blobs and inner blobs, that's because of people having damage to parts of their brain. That's why we know that stuff. Small, there's three of them, they came in quickly, they were not in the world. So, we've learned a lot about function from dysfunction. It's a huge thing. Case studies, constantly talking about case studies, right? Because we can't do a lot of things with humans ethically, right? So we don't. Instead, what we do is we look at animal models and we look at case studies. And they can tell us what they're doing. Wilder Penfield, Mary Rafferty, all the way to those case studies about vision that we talked about in the last one, vision section. Now, I talked about case studies, the other way we get information, it's not the only way, another really important one is animal work. You can do animal work because it's fun and interesting. I don't really care about people. I mean, you guys are fine, but it's not as interesting to me as doing stuff with non-humans because I just find it cool and interesting, and you have to design clever experiments because they can't talk, all that stuff. But you can also do it for the purpose of trying to understand how human memory and human cognition and human motor system and human perceptual systems, etc., work. And we've done a lot of that too. So Galvani and Levy did their stuff with frogs, all kinds of lesion stuff, right? So when you damage part of a rat brain and you see what kind of behavior comes out. One of the key ones was when you could block long-term potentiation, and usually that blocks learning, not always. And I talk about cooling and warming parts of the brain, so you can basically do a reversible lesion, right? So you can turn a part off and turn it back on. The other thing is that non-invasive work is as important as invasive work. So invasive cutting up, that looked like I was gonna go right into your head, didn't I? Sorry. Getting, doing operations, doing things like Penfield did where, while he was doing an operation, doing stuff. That's all very interesting, but you can also do things that isn't invasive. So something that isn't a medical procedure at all. So the visual field stuff, where you show things to just one visual field, the left or the right, it goes only to the right or the left hemisphere. The stuff I talked about, my work on spatial cognition, in humans, we were able to isolate something that's a purely geometric module in human spatial representation without having to go in and turn things off in their brain. We just were able to design clever enough experiments that made it so the only thing they would use would be the geometry. Various neurological tests, again, are non-invasive, right? So when you get a bump on the head and the neurologist says, what are these? And if you can name them, that's good. But if you say, those are items that are used to open locks, and I say, you need keys? Yes. So what are they? Well, they're an apparatus for opening a door. And I've had this conversation with my father when he was alive. Now that he's dead, it's hard to have conversations with him. They're going to be much more one-sided. You can laugh at that. It's okay. I don't like that my dad's dead, but I'm pretty at peace with it now. It's been 15 years, so it's okay. MRIs are actually non-invasive. So if you do a PET scan, you do a CAT scan, that involves them asking you questions like, how many X-rays have you had this year? Because they don't want to give you too much radiation. MRI, it's just a magnet. It can't hurt you. It can hurt you if you, I don't know, rip your earrings out of your ears. So you take your jewelry off, you know, things like that. You take your glasses off. And if you've got a metal plate in your head, you got a problem. You can't be an MRI. But it really is just a very powerful, extremely powerful magnetic field. And this has allowed us to watch people think, which is pretty cool. So again, this is another theme. Non-invasive, experimental work can help us understand how nervous systems work. Now, you know that one of my favorite things in the world is how nervous systems are hierarchical and parallel. Right? There was a question like that. Test one had a question like that. So, here's some just examples. I think the hierarchy is obvious, and so is the parallel part of it. Just think about vision. I mean, now that we know about the visual system, I think it's a great example of hierarchical and parallel. Cell assemblies. We talked about that in the end when I talked about Hebb's idea of the cell assembly, sort of a pattern of activation. And the idea that there's a central nervous system, a peripheral nervous system, and an autonomic nervous system that are all working at the same time. They're separate systems, but they're all working at the same time. Okay. So that's, if you can, while you're studying, the titles of all those slides that we just went through are all big themes. While you're studying, think to yourself, oh, that's an example of hierarchical and parallel. Oh, that's an example of how non-invasive work's important. Oh, that's about a case study. If you do that, it'll really help you do well, especially on the essay question. Because the essay question is open-ended enough that if you've understood everything in this course, you can really do well. And if it's open-ended enough that if you can think of your examples and you've been doing it while you're studying because of, you know, us talking about this today, you'll do well. So it's totally possible to really ace this. Remember, you've been tested on two-thirds of the material you've been tested on already. Right? So, first off, any questions about the final? Go ahead, Jack.
So the first theme is counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that more leads me into the evolved thing. So, I mean, the counterintuitive is more of a characteristic, it's a characteristic of nervous systems because it is not intuitive how it's organized, but that's there because of evolution. So I think put those two together.
Okay.
Yeah. So any questions on what I just said or about the organization of the final before we see if you have any actual questions on material that you've been studying already and none of you have been studying? I just thought I'd throw that in, even though you should be already. Remember what I said the other day, half an hour a night. You'll nail it if you do half an hour a night and stop. The worst thing you can do is nothing. The second worst thing you can do is like 6 hours the night before. That's awful. You can do it, but it's not, it's just this side of doing nothing. Like the best thing to do is study in small bouts for a couple of weeks. Yeah, and I see you nodding. Have you figured that out or somebody tell you that? I told you that? Because I mean,
you've told us that a lot.
I know I've said it a lot. I've said it a lot, but I'll say that it's one of those things. A lot of students kind of figure it out when they get into second or third. You think, you know what? Might be a better use of my time. And it actually works.
It's more fun, too. Like when you can just do 30 minutes of everything, like,
yeah.
You don't get bored.
You don't get as bored. It forces you to take breaks, and breaks are important. So if you go for 30 minutes and say, okay, good, now I'm done studying 2606, I'm going to study stats now, but before I study stats, I better go get a drink of water. And you leave the room, you come back, it really is important. So yeah, breaks are important too, so it forces you to have breaks. Because it's totally doable to ace this thing. It's not hard. And it also won't be in this horrible, god-awful nightmare of a room. If I had my way, we'd put plastic explosives all around here to blow the place up.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it would probably also lead to terrorism charges. So I probably should do that.
I mean, yeah. That's
it. Yeah, but maybe just close it off somehow. I hate this room. But you know, our final's in NW200s. It's gonna be way better, a lot more relaxed. I probably won't have to yell so much.
It's not bad.
I hate the yelling.
It's nice.
I'm sure you don't like it either. But All right, so questions about anything specific? You can be general too, I guess, but anybody have any questions? This is going to be really short if you have no questions. And it's fine by me, by the way. Like, I'm cool. Oh, Becca, yay!
I was wondering if you could remind me what the function of the gyros and the
sulcus
is. Like, what's the function?
Oh, okay. They don't necessarily have functions. They all have different ones. So some gyri have function X, Y, Z, and some sulci have other functions, but they're all so different. Like the dentate gyrus is important in memory. Pick one out of the air there. That's the only one I can think of offhand, actually, so that's one. So yeah, it's that kind of thing. So just like how hippocampus does X, amygdala does Y, this some gyrus or some sulcus does Z, the other one does A and B.
So it's basically just like the shape of the brain in the spot, and then whatever spot is in the brain.
That's exactly correct. Yeah, well, very well put. That was actually, I might steal that line and use it in the future when I'm teaching this. Seriously, that was really good. Yeah, it's the wrinkliness. Remember, the sulci and gyri are the same for everybody. So as much as it looks like it's kind of haphazard, it is, but it's the same in mine as it is, mine's a bad example. It's the same in yours and yours as it is in yours and yours. My occipital lobe's weird, so that was fine. But I'm not going to use myself as an example. But yeah, that's all this. Other questions? That was an easy one. Good. I like the easy ones. Hard ones are fun. You know, kind of. Also, you should know that I'll be, you know, you okay back then? You should know that I'll, we can set up a time where we can sit down and talk about, not only, I've talked to a couple of you just even today, but study strategies, but I've talked to others about material too, so we can always set up a time, you can email me. This is literally my job. It's totally okay to ask me questions. Don't feel like you're imposing on me by saying, can I come in and talk to you a little bit about the final? Uh-huh. That's my job. Every couple of weeks, money goes into my bank account for that specific purpose. So it's totally cool. Don't feel like you're imposing on me. Sometimes I can answer on an email quickly, but not always. Yeah, Michael, what's up?
I was wondering if you could explain again about how reuptake works.
How it works? Let me see if I can get a... Let's see. Do I use the blackboard today? Or do I... It's all nice and clean and there's no chalk. Well, I have my iPad with me, and I have my, I think I have my stylus here. I'll find out in a moment. I do. Okay. So let me just do this, because then I can draw with this. And that's where we are. Beautiful. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to there, because that gives me a clean sheet here. So, okay. If we have a... so that's obviously the end of an axon, clearly.
What's exactly?
Obviously. I mean, I think as we all know, they tend to be blue. So, what happens in this situation is... Actually, you know what? I'm going to get rid of that, because I'm going to do it this way. So it's going there, and there's the postsynaptic neuron, okay? So it's going across. So what happens is, after, remember, vesicles come along, they fuse with the cell membrane, we get full collapse fusion perhaps, right? Which has nothing to do with nuclear power. Guys. So they release the neurotransmitter, so you got neurotransmitter floating around, and neurotransmitter, what it's doing is it's looking for a binding site. So most of it hits, let's say most of these hit binding sites. And that one's gonna go there. But now we have a couple of molecules right here that don't bind. There's no place for it to go. Now the nice thing is your nervous system is very environmentally friendly. What it does is it recycles, it reuses things. Neurotransmitter molecules are expensive to make, and if they're sitting there not being used, may as well reuse them. So what happens is a, I'm trying to make this as complicated as it should be for this course, but not needlessly complicated. Some signaling happens, that's all you need to know. Some signaling happens that, hey, there's neurotransmitter out here. And what happens is a reuptake transporter protein, okay? We'll call that an RT, reuptake transporter, comes along and grabs a hold of this and pulls it back into that neuron, okay? That's how, for example, a lot of reuptake inhibitors work. They stop those reuptake transporter proteins. Yes, please.
So that's actually one of my next questions, which is, so with the SSRI, blocking that.
Yes.
So that works as an antidepressant because eventually those ones that didn't latch on.
Yes, that's exactly correct. That's the notion of why it is an antidepressant. Oh. What you described is correct. Is that what leads to the antidepressant effect? Could be. Like, we're not entirely sure. They're antidepressants. They work. But you got to remember that that effect happens right away. You take the pills, it happens right away. The antidepressant effects may take between 2 weeks and 2 months to show up with people. Unlike if I give you an antipsychotic medication and you're psychotic, the voices go away in like 30 minutes. Like, as soon as the drug kicks in, you're fine. See, one of the things, and we talk about this in neuropharmacology, is that there's these, we can kill the reuptake transporter, but if we actually completely kill it and you have none left, and that reuptake transporter is important for other things. And molecules, you know, that the body makes aren't usually just don't have one function. So one of the issues that can happen with monoamine oxidase inhibitors is that there are non-reversible monoamine oxidase inhibitors. This is, gets a little bit chemistry-y, but what happens here is that they, ones that actually create real molecular bonds and create new molecules, now that reuptake transporter is gone. And if you need it, so it, you can have non-reversible reuptake inhibitors, and they can cause heart attacks. That they don't always, and they don't usually, but they can. On the other hand, if you have, there are reversible monoamine reuptake inhibitors, for example, and that's what is typically prescribed in Canada. If you do have a, start having a cardiac event, you can reverse it, because it doesn't actually destroy the reuptake transporter. What it does is it, using not molecular bonds, but weaker bonds. So it's not creating a new molecule, so you can actually give another drug that corrects that. So it's a little safer. But yeah, basically that's what's happened, what you've described. That said, we don't really know what causes the antidepressant effect. There's a bunch of guesses. And monoamine neurotransmitters, especially serotonin, and those systems have something to do with it, but no one really knows what it is that's causing the antidepressant effect. The drugs work. The drugs work. It's just not that, there's this notion that if I just gave you a whole bunch of serotonin, you wouldn't be depressed anymore. If I just gave you a whole bunch of serotonin, it would be the equivalent of you tripping on acid. That's what LSD is. It's basically serotonin. You don't just want a whole bunch of serotonin. You'd start hearing colors and seeing sound, which would be probably even worse than being. So now you're having a trip and you're depressed. That doesn't sound like a good time. Yeah. It's amazing that something that sits up here is so sensitive to like quarters of micrograms of things, but it is. It is. Good question. Other questions? That was a really good one.
Topic of reuptake.
Yeah.
Go back over the different kinds kinds of antidepressants? Because we just did SSRI from
Okay, so SSRIs are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, right? And they're what they're doing, whoops, I got it upside down. Let's still, okay, there you go. Jesus, now it doesn't look the way I want to hold it. Okay. More difficult than I thought. Okay, so selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors are doing this for serotonin. What they're doing is they're making this reuptake transporter protein, they're making it not work. Monoamine oxidase inhibitors are a step back. So monoamine oxidase is an enzyme that inactivates monoamine neurotransmitters. So what this does is it blocks monoamine oxidase from working. So instead of these extra ones being broken down by monoamine oxidase, they aren't. Now this is where you get the problem of it being reversible or not, because you need monoamine oxidase for other things, for digestion of certain foods, for example. And it can kill you if you don't have it. It can kill you because you can have a heart attack. So you have to be very careful with those drugs. And usually you're told if you're taking a non-reversible monoamine oxidase inhibitor, and even a reversible one, you're told, please avoid the following foods. All works out fine. At least the nice thing is, if it's a reversible one, if you do have some of that food and you didn't know it, you like a whole bunch of salami on pizza. I don't know how you'd miss having a whole bunch of salami, but that's one of the things you should avoid. You can go to the doctor, or go to the emergency room, and they can give you something that'll fix. If you have the non-reversible ones, you can die. You gotta be careful with those. Tricyclic antidepressants block reuptake of all monoamine neurotransmitters. They work like the same way that SSRIs work, they just are more broad in how they work.
Would you mind giving me a few actual drug examples of the
monoamine oxidase inhibitors? Geez, offhand.
I work at a pharmacy, so it would just be easy to connect it.
Well, okay, so first SSRIs, fluoxetine,
yeah,
is obvious, right? Or anything that says fluoxetine in it. Those are SSRIs. I gotta think of the names of drugs. Just offhand, I can't right now.
Also, this isn't really relevant, I guess, but
sure.
Gabapentin is a drug that lots of people have recently been using. Honestly, abusing it, which is weird because it's not really a drug that was looked at as to be abused.
Okay.
But what is that?
I don't know what that drug is. What's the name of the drug? What's
gabapentin?
Look, just tell me. Can you look it up and see what kind of drug it is? Because if I, because then I can have an idea of what it does. Because if it says it's a da 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 da. Because a lot of times those.
Okay, so it says that it works in both pain relief and anticonvulsant. So for seizures and for pain. In the nervous system.
And what's it in?
Used for arthritis.
Oh, okay. And it's also got abuse potential?
Yeah, because recently at the pharmacy, people have been trying more and more to get prescriptions for this drug, which is, honestly, it's weird because that's not.
I wonder, though, if you could take that drug, mix it with something else, and it does something.
Probably.
For sure. Like, of course it would, it's, I think with alcohol, it creates more of an intense drowsiness. Which
oh, nice.
Is,
good, something that makes you even more likely to die. That's good.
Yeah.
Those are always the best drugs, the ones that make overdoses even easier.
Yeah.
Big laughs outside, too. So this is obvious as a big hit, that one. I'd have to look more into it. That's fascinating. I mean, a lot of times when there's things that just become new abuse drugs, it's because they're mixed with something else.
That's fair.
Or people take them and they're used in manufacture of things, right? So it's just the same way as you can't buy canned air anymore, like, you know, to clean out electronics, because it's got a propellant in it that's psychoactive.
You can't buy it at all? Like,
you can buy it, but you have to go, they come and they give it to you.
Like it's like behind the glass.
Yeah, and it used to be you just picked it up and put it on the counter at Best Buy and you bought it. Now they go, well, I have that behind the thing because maybe you're going to do a thing with it.
You should see crap tire, everything behind.
Oh, no, a lot of stuff like that. That's right. I understand why.
Wait, so it says It mirrors the effects of GABA.
Oh, okay, so now I know how it works. Okay, that's better. Yeah, so if it's a GABA agonist, it's a GABA agonist,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So barbiturates and benzodiazepines are GABA agonists. Alcohol probably is, but the idea of mixing it with alcohol to get more drowsy makes complete sense. Also, Jesus, people could die. That's, no, please.
I was gonna say, I work at in addiction. And
yeah.
Sometimes, like even antipsychotics, like you're saying that, like, I don't know why anybody would have remembered, and I completely understand that. But some drugs people want to get their hands on because they can't come down when they want. So like you're like on like a crazy trip from methamphetamines or cocaine or whatever, and like you just want to sleep because you've been up for like 10 days or whatever. So like people will actually seek out antipsychotics.
They'll take Calpurnol or something.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So it's like a poor man's speedball, right?
I've seen multiple doctors prescribe quetiapine off-label for people who want it for sleep and stuff like that. So it'll be like from addiction centers for when people do need to get themselves to sleep. They'll just
And you get off-label prescriptions for tricyclics, sleeping pills.
Yes, yeah.
I mentioned my dad before. When my dad died, my mom was given a prescription of those, and it's like, here's 10 pills, 5 milligrams a piece. That's enough for now. And you know, my mom knew enough that she wasn't gonna do anything with it, and it wouldn't be enough of the whole bottle to do anything with it anyway. But, because I remember she asked me, what are these things? These are tricyclic antidepressants, mom. I'm not depressed, and I said, mom, dad just died. There's a really good reason they're giving you those, and it's so you can get some sleep. You know, that kind of thing. And that makes complete sense.
Actually, with the quetiapine, I've heard about cases where like people do, they take like extreme overdose amount, but then they force themselves to stay awake.
Yeah, so
then they like go into like an awake dream state
to mimic orgasm.
Just go buy a bottle of vodka.
Right?
There's a bottle of one shot, you're good to go.
Weed is legal. Just go get way too much THC oil. That'll mess you up pretty bad for a day or two, but it won't kill you. Questions. We've had a fun little drug discussion here. Maybe we're gonna have more. What do you want to know about?
I'm just wondering if you could give me a quick explanation again of long-term potentiation.
Oh yeah, sure. Long-term potentiation. So what long-term potentiation is a phenomenon that once a circuit is fired, a neural circuit, it will fire more quickly the next time. And this was something that was discovered by Donald Hepp. I shouldn't say that. This was something that was posited by Donald Hebb. He said this must happen. That's the Hebb synapse, right? So what happens is there's this long-term potentiation. The other side of it, by the way, is called long-term depression, which is just making everything getting slower. But we're worrying about long-term potentiation. So LTP, especially in hippocampus, is mediated by a neuromodulator called NMDA. NMDA, and so that's what? November, Mabel, Delta, Alpha, and NMDA. And it, if you block NMDA, rats have trouble learning spatial tasks, especially in the Morris water maze, which is this thing about this big around, about that deep. It's got a little platform. The rat has to swim to the little platform. Rats don't like swimming. They can, they just don't like it very much. It's like cats, right? They can swim, they don't like it. So you put the rat in, he swims, he gets to the little platform he's at. And the platform's just below the surface of the liquid, and the liquid tends to be something like skim milk, so the rat actually can't see it. And the rat learns to do that. However, if you block on LTP, so you block NMDA, then there's no LTP in the hippocampus, and they can't learn the name, they can't learn Morris water maze. Unless they got a chance to swim around in the maze before they did it without the platform. So if they got pre-trained to swim, they actually can learn. So LTP isn't the substance of learning, but it's really important. So that's what long-term potentiation is.
Has there been any research about learning disabilities or intellectual disabilities involving those?
I haven't heard of anything like that, and that would surprise me if it was something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything, but it may be something.
Okay.
There may be stuff that I just haven't heard of. You know, I don't know all the work. but I doubt something like a learning disability is caused by that.
Okay.
It would surprise me.
Okay.
But that's basically just a gut feeling. So I'm not, you know, you really shouldn't go just on my gut feeling. It's a good question. Other stuff, what do you want to know? Pardon me? What about the diagrams for the file? What do you want to know? Which ones are they? What are the important ones? I'm not going to tell you that. You think I'm going to tell you? Nice try, though. Would you like to know what the old questions are as well?
I'm not saying which ones. I'm saying important.
Well, I can't. That's so. You have to figure that out more than me. I mean, that's more your. You have to figure out what the important things are. But look, I can tell you some things it won't be. But I can tell you what it won't be. And we've had diagrams that you've seen in the. I'm not going to make you label the diagram with a human eye. I'm not going to do that. You should have been able to do that in grade 10. You did that in biology in grade 10, grade 8. Stuff like that. I mean, it's not going to be something like that. There's no way I would be, like I said, the human eye or stuff like that. There's, I can say that while potentially the diagram would surprise you, it won't be difficult. Yeah, I think that's a fair statement, actually. I'm not saying it will surprise you, I'm saying it could. But it's not like it's something that you should look at and go, I have no idea how to do this. You should all be able to do it. You'll be fine. I'm not trying to trick anybody. That's not how I roll. That's really cool. But yeah, I can't say beyond that because it starts to get to giving a lot of hints. Other things. And I realize that's probably quite unsatisfactory, but so be it. It is. Anything else? Like I said, you can always email me. We have a lot of time before the test, right? 18th, is that right? 17th. No, it's real. I mean, it's only a 2-hour exam. It's 9 till 11. It's 2 hours. On the thing it says 3, it says that simply because they're all 3-hour slots. But it's 2 hours long. It's designed to be 2 hours long. It shouldn't take you more than 2 hours. If it takes you more than 2 hours, you don't know what you're doing. And I mean badly. Because it's the same length as one of our term tests. Right? It's 4 definitions, 1 diagram, an essay question. It's the same length as one of our term tests. You get an hour and 20 for our term tests. You're getting an extra 40 minutes to do this. It's way more than enough time. If I could make shorter final exams, I would. I really would. I think it's dumb that people are like, hey, my final exam's 3 hours long. Way to go. We're all very impressed. You can torture students. That's really cool.
That's what one of my teachers did for 2 of our classes. We have 2 full 3 hours.
No, and most people do that. I just don't see the logic. That's all I'm saying. And because I see them as measuring instruments. And if I could hold my phone up to your brain and find out how much you knew, I would do that instead. But I can't do that, so I got to give you a test. And the shortest it's allowed to be is 2 hours. There are regulations, and I follow them. But yeah, it's 2 hours. You won't need 3 hours. As you know, like when you did the tests, most people were done in an hour. I would expect most people to be done around an hour. The nice thing is we're not in this room, this horrible room, where you're all sitting beside each other. And like, even if you don't like each other, it's like, well, now we're married. Because you're so, just, it's, we're in NW200, it's so much less good. So much sense. And I probably won't have to yell so much. Something, and I don't think this is the group I should be talking to about this, because you're all here, but if something happens in the final and someone is caught, unlike a regular test where you can get a zero for some academic misconduct thingy, if that happens in a final exam, you get a zero in the course, you get expelled from university. Like, we don't screw around with final exams. So I'm just saying, please, I don't think you're those folks, because you're all here today. But if you have friends who are thinking of doing something stupid, tell them not to. Because it would be very bad for them. And we can't not give zeros for whole courses when it comes to final exams, integrity. It's a really big thing. Like I said, I'm probably not talking to you guys because you're here today. You're probably the honest people that want to be here. Not that all of you people who aren't here aren't honest, but I think you understand what I'm saying. Okay. Other questions? I don't know what conclusion. Well, that's it. There it is. Yeah. All right. Oh, you got something? Or you just lose your hair? Okay. Sorry.
My vision, I don't see things well, so a lot of times I disagree with stuff. That's the only reason.
All right. So, you know what? I think we're done. Remember, you can feel free to come to ask me questions, send me emails, set up a time for a meeting before the final. I am totally happy to do that. This is my last one until September. So that makes me incredibly happy that I don't have to stand in front of people and talk until September. So I will see you all at the final exam, and Slava Ukraini. So thanks for listening to the lecture. I hope you got something out of it, as I noted in the intro. These are copyrighted, Sharealike 3.0 Canada, some rights reserved. So you can redistribute this all you want, but if you redistribute it, you can't make any money off of it. And also, if you mash it up, I get to mash up your stuff. Most of the vast majority of the music I found was on an old website called GarageBand, which doesn't exist anymore. And then it was called PodSafe Music. So this is all music that I have, that it's perfectly reasonable to put on these podcasts. If you are interested, I can oftentimes find the name of the band. The name of the band will be listed in the post. And go look these bands up and buy their music, because if they're cool enough to let me use this, you should be cool enough to pay 99 cents or whatever to buy one of their songs. On that note, I will see you next time.